Hi, Gala.
Hey, Rose.
How's it going?
It's okay. It's very hot today in Brooklyn, like in the 90s. It's been 90s for 2 days, which is confusing because for a minute there, it was fall. But, you know, you just never know what's going to happen next in the sky.
You know, it does seem like those are the times that we are in.
What's it like in New Mexico?
You know, it's actually starting to kind of feel like fall, though. It's like it's in the 80s, but there's just the difference in the quality of light. I feel like there's like a shift where you just feel it. It like gets more orangey, you know what I'm saying? And I saw like the first leaves on a cottonwood start to
beautiful.
Turn yellow. It's beautiful. And, you know, when I used to live in New York, by the end of summer, I was so miserable with how humid and hot it was that we started this thing. We were like, fuck you, summer. Look what I can do. We're just like, we just extend the joy into fall, which like I do love fall. It's a lovely time of year. But here, summer is so brief that I'm finding myself falling back into the like, no, like the first cold wind, the first night you need a sweatshirt or whatever. I'm like, no, don't leave. Please don't leave, which is hilarious because fall is also very beautiful out here and winter
yeah,
is beautiful until about after my birthday and then I wanted to be over.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the best things happen in fall.
It's true, right?
Does New Mexico have a pumpkin spice culture?
I don't really think so. I mean, we've had chili season actually and then people do things like sell 40 pounds of peaches for $25. So
that sounds right. Do you buy 40 pounds of peaches?
I don't because I'm allergic, but people I know do.
You're allergic to peaches?
It's a long story.
To stone fruit?
To some most stone fruit, unless it's cooked. If it's cooked, it's fine. So I can eat a cobbler. I just can't bite into a juicy peach without my mouth getting itchy.
I feel like there should be like a Redux zine called Stone Fruit Blues.
What better way to segue or intro our Virgo season episode than touch on our transcestor, Leslie Feinberg, right?
100%.
What does Virgo season make you think of, Gala?
Outfits.
I was thinking the same thing.
Really?
Yeah, weirdly.
Wow, Brian Mells.
Yeah, cool Australian accent. But right, I feel like summer, particularly if you're living somewhere that's like super hot and sweaty, you wear what works. But fall, you start to get to like make more choices, you get a little cuter, you have more options, you know, you want things to look a little more put together.
It's true. And but also I think that there's the sort of you're describing kind of like the ingredients, like what the context that creates outfits. And but also I think that people don't talk enough about like the Virgo propensity toward like looking unique. Like I think Virgo people are like very adventurous with clothing, or can be, especially if they're like predominantly more in like kind of like in the mutable arena, or they're, you know, or perhaps they have a lot of heavy Leo placements, right? So that combines like Virgo with some like Leo stuff happening in there. I just feel like the Virgos that I've known and loved are some of the most adventurous dressers, and they'll just be like, isn't she fabulous? I'm gonna wear this like head to toe feather getup, and you're like, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I immediately just think of Billy Porter, who's a Virgo and has like very adventurous, very outlandish, lavish style that's like very particular, but also like you can tell it's a Billy Porter look, but also there's a lot of range of expression. It's not just like a uniform that they wear, you know?
Well, wasn't Prince a Virgo too?
Prince was a Gemini, but also Mercurial. So maybe that's part of it too, though, right?
Of course, because that's the gay ingredient.
That is the gay ingredient. And it's also like kind of stuck between, not stuck between, but, you know, caught between these other energies at play, right? Like this mutability between the fixed and the cardinal, mm-hmm. that's kind of like, all right, I see and love what you're doing here. I see and love what you're doing there. How do we keep them guessing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also like the archival instinct. Like if you are somebody who is predisposed to noticing patterns, especially over time and years, and you discover kind of like a love for them, you know, and a lot of fashion is referential, right? It's an art form. So people who like to play with reference, with time, right? Yeah. Virgos love to play with time. So I think that there's that, a part of that is involved as well, that they are sort of like, it's almost like a librarian showing you the stacks, you know, except it's just like the way they're dressed. They're like, oh, look at my archival jacket.
Yeah, and librarian was like in my head earlier as well, but not necessarily the aesthetic, but yeah, like the cataloger. And I think there's also something about, you know, when we call something mercurial, part of it that we're talking about is Mercury's adaptability and like the way that it responds to the moment or the environment or the temperature, right? That it like finds these details, references this catalog, and then is like, okay, how do I assemble this in response to this moment?
Yeah, it's hard to date somebody like that sometimes. You have to be ready. Like, that has to be your thing. Like, you have to be ready to date someone who's, like, kind of a different person for every occasion, you know?
And do you think that's true of all mutable folks, or do you think especially of the mercurial friends?
I think it's very true of all mutable folks in different iterations, right? Like the thing about like if we are to believe that astrology is real, it's like you can't just have everybody being the same, right?
Right.
Or it's not this idea like, oh, like all Virgos are neurotic. It's like, no, like that's not how it works, right? There's like all these little ingredients that come together and form a response. Mm-hmm. And that response is, you know, informed by a lot of different influences. So like, yeah, I think that actually all mutable signs are in one way or another, or people who are mutable heavy, right? So you could be a cardinal, but if you have a lot of mutable stuff, it's still coming up all the time. I think people who have a lot of or high mutable influence tend to really show up differently, right? Like in every occasion. And some people might say, oh, but don't we all like show up differently? Like, aren't we different at work than we are at home? And I'm like, it's one thing to be like buttoning up your shirt for your authority figures, you know what I mean? And a whole other thing to like literally like switch your intonations, your way of dress, the kind of stories you tell, what parts of yourself you share between like literally one friend group and another, you know?
Yeah, I know that.
And this actually, and I'm not trying to be down on people who do that, because it can be great for some people. They could just have a lot of fun and get to know a lot of different types of people, because not everybody wants the same type of you, right?
Yeah.
Not everybody can handle the person who's gregarious. So like a more milquetoast interaction, and you can give that to them.
Yeah.
So like, congratulations.
Yeah, I think that there is a... In my experience, right, I can't speak to everybody's experience, there can be a little bit of like a cultural predisposition to like value consistency or fixity over like a more adaptive or kind of varied expression, right? The idea that like you can't trust somebody if, you know, that you're two-faced or you're double speaking or you're this or you're that. And I'm also like, I feel that like we like some consistency in relationship. And also, can we not contain multitudes, my dudes?
And sometimes you need those multitudes. Like, I know you, Rose, are a stranger talker. As a dog companion, I am also now a stranger talker. And while in my youth, strangers liked to talk to me, and I had to like kind of really create a boundary because everyone just like sit down and tell me all their problems because of my Scorpio stuff. I think later in life, like now as a dog companion, stranger talker, it's more like just everybody in my community. Like I'll just be walking around and, you know, like corner dude one, corner dude two, like corner, like lady on her stoop three. Like, there are people who I just am gonna see every single day at 8:30 a.m. at like and all these times, and it behooves me to say hi to them because they are fixed elements in my day, and I have to interact with them in a way that is safe for me and for my dog, and also that gives me a sense of safety as I move through the neighborhood in all time hours of the night, right? So it's like, if we protect each other, then we have to know each other. Like, if I know all of these different people, then I don't have to worry when I'm going down the street, because I feel like this whole block is a place that I can go to, right? But that also means that, like, I'm not talking to every person about who, like, their politics and their shit, because ultimately then we're not going to see, like, and it's not like I dress different, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm still wearing my like Dykes for Defunding the Police tank top, but I'm not like looking at them and being like, "What do you think of this shirt?" You know, I'm like, "Oh, you're in accounting? That's really, well, that's impressive." How'd you pursue that?
Well, and there's something about this dance of not assuming a shared experience, but still finding some kind of commonality that I think you're also speaking to. That, like, if we're ever going to change things in this world, we need to find ways to build those bridges and to also understand that, like, yeah, maybe it doesn't need to get that deep, but it's better to know your neighbors than to not.
I mean, listen, it's like, it's complicated, right? It's like, it's complicated to ask, like, how deep should it get? But I think at the end of the day, I've had enough arguments with people to recognize, like, when those kind of approaches are going to work better than other times. And sometimes, you know, I can't even assume. I feel like maybe half these people are on the same side as me. I just don't ask. I know that if they see me in my tiny shorts and my fucking hairy ass legs and my Dykes for Defunding the Police tank top, and they say hello to me every morning, then like, they're probably not on the wrong side. You know what I mean? Like,
No.
we're.
Well, and I think also you're speaking to something that is like a larger, widespread phenomena that, like, I think that people's in-person interactions and the way that they live their life in the mundane, in their neighborhoods, in the day-to-day, is not always really connected to their kind of abstract political beliefs. You know, there's like who you vote for or what you might write on a Facebook forum, and then there's how you like actually talk to your neighbor walking their dog. And you know, your politics matter to a certain extent in the abstract, but I think that if we're going to find a way through this kind of bifurcation that we're having socially, we have to kind of like pull the scope back into like, how do I talk to my neighbors? How do I talk to the mechanic or the barista or the whatever, right?
Do you feel like there is an astrological movement that supports this?
I think there's a few. I think that there's a lot of that we're learning from Pisces just about the way that we are connected and kind of the illusion of separation or of even the individual. But I also think that Pluto moving into Aquarius has the capacity to really remind us of the power of the collective, honestly, the power of organizing and finding common ground. Well, also kind of, you know, the thing about Aquarius is it's a sign that has to do with the group, but it's also a sign that very much values and respects kind of individuation within it. Like, you can do your thing, I can do my thing. I think we should all have clean water. Do you agree? Okay, cool. Let's start there, right?
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit of Mars and Libra.
Ooh, yeah.
Not
That too, right?
that I'm biased about that or anything.
But it's like how to find ways to like to combat toxic individualism without requiring kind of a homogenization, right?
Right. But I guess it's like why I bring Mars and Libra up too, although, you know, clearly it's not the same as like these planetary movements that are going to be taking the whole year. But, you know, there's something to be said for Libra and energy as a cardinal, right? Which people kind of forget about, that actually, like, the Libran impulse is to push forward, right? It is to put, like, to turn that wheel. And so it's like, how does Libra turn that wheel, you know? And a part of that is like, what if we just all shut up and kind of turned it, you know? What if we all just agreed on one thing, and that's that we want to turn the wheel and, like, kind of start there and then, like, move backwards?
You know? Yeah, I think so. And also, Mars in Libra inherently actually holds this tension of the Aries Libra axis, which, surprise, the eclipses are in now too, right?
Ooh.
Mars rules Aries, which is opposite Libra, right? So we have these sibling signs who want and need different things and go about getting them in different ways. So there's also this, I think that's part of why Mars in Libra is influencing in this way, right?
These two signs, man, they're like some of the most different signs of the, you know, you ever get like a Libra and an Aries in the same room and you're just like, huh.
It's pretty rare. Like, you and I have talked about sibling signs before, and like some of them, I'm like, is there much of a difference, right? We talked about the horny spooky axis with Taurus and Scorpio. Oh, yeah. And, you know, Gemini and Sag, it's very easy to see the through line there, right? That information superhighway.
Yes.
What are some chaotic others? Aquarius and Leo, like, you both want attention, don't lie.
Yes. I'm so different.
Me too. What are the other friends we have going? We've got Libra, Aries, Taurus, Scorpio. Cancer and Capricorn.
I feel like that combo is like that kind of the under radar similarity. Like, people don't know until they know.
Yeah.
But it's that same, like, here's the big difference though for me is that Cancers are really like loud about being givers. You know what I mean? Like, Cancers are just like, I give. And Capricorns are not loud about being givers.
Mm-mm.
Like, they are loud about other shit.
Yeah.
Like, they're loud about being, like, working too hard and, like, you know, overextending themselves. I'm like, well, why'd you walk that way? That was the long road. You did that. But but Capricorns are just as, like, they're both these, like, cardinal, hardworking signs that will, like, certify themselves in, like, 20 different things before, like, doing one job. They're like, well, it'd be better if I had 40 certifications. And you're like, okay, like, everyone else is just fucking winging it, but you do you. But they both are actually people who will really build their lives around one person. They will, like, give every last bit of energy to, like, keeping another person afloat.
Well, and I think they also, when they're not doing super well, when they have some stuff to figure out, I think both signs will overextend and then be resentful.
One quietly and one very loudly.
Exactly. But they both want to be needed.
That's true. They both want to be needed, but one of them makes themselves indispensable.
Well, speaking of making themselves indispensable, I think we got to get back to Virgo and Pisces.
Right, because they are the sibling signs that we haven't yet dissected.
It's true, which dissection is also very good Virgo keyword, I feel like.
Tell me more.
When I think of dissection, it's like I'm going to dig into something, maybe make a little bit of a mess, but ultimately because I like need to see how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I'm going to take apart this TV to figure out how it works. I'm going to maybe dismantle my relationship to figure out how it works, right?
100%. Oh my God. They give it a trigger warning.
Sorry. But so we have this Mercury ruled sign that is what? Detailed focus, craft, building competency, sometimes at the expense of mental health, right? Just kind of like, I won't stop till it's perfect, which you'll never get there. Just saying. And then we have Pisces, which is Jupiter or Neptune ruled, depending on how you practice, which is what? A sign of. You know, people talk about Sag as the big picture and sometimes Pisces, but I feel like Pisces is like world building and also just that, like, everything's connected. It's like the sign of soup, you know what I mean?
The sign of soup.
Primordial and otherwise.
I guess that makes sense. You know, why not? Why not?
But so, right, we've got this real, it's creative chaos in some ways as Pisces, which we only call chaos the things that we don't understand the pattern or machinations of, right? It's like.
I mean, that's like all Virgo activity. I mean, there's the thing between them, right, is this like love of the process. They both have it. They both have a love of the process. I mean, and they're both creative in their own way, but I feel like a Piscean love of the process is like a Pisces will be working on 20 songs you will never hear. But it's not because they're like trying to make it perfect. It's just because they're like in service to each moment, right? So they're just like, now I'm going to start another song. And it's like, oh, I have 20 songs, but they're in love with the process. They're not necessarily interested in like the final thing being perfect, you know? Which, you know, they could be. There could be, obviously, not all Pisces or whatever, but I feel like a Piscean instinct is just to make and to like and to kind of respond to that in like intuitive yen. To like to kind of, you know, to serve it, to answer that call. But, you know, when they talk about art and like loving the process, like that kind of artist's way thing, like the Pisces are like really good at that shit. And I feel like Virgos on the other side or on the same side are also in service to the process, but they're constantly trying, to my mind, they're constantly trying to dissect that process, right? They're like, well, what is this process? Is it functional? Is it on its way to anything? Should I change my process? Huh? And it's almost like instead of writing 10 new songs, they're writing one song in like 10 different ways. They're like, this process.
Yeah, the
They're like, let's go
iterations.
again.
Yeah, well, and I think that, like, in some ways, Pisces' connection to creativity is one of kind of channeling, right? The idea is like inspiration hits, and then I might write those 20 songs, and then I might go 3 months where I just like smoke weed in bed, waiting for it to hit again. Whereas Virgo is like, creativity is effort applied, you know, or something. You know what I mean, though? It's like Pisces is like spontaneous talent, and Virgo is like, I don't leave the studio till my fingers are bleeding.
But it's like, I don't know, now that this makes any sense, maybe instead of just my mind, but then I guess I'm on the Virgo Pisces tip for saying shit like this. But it's almost like if you imagine Pisces and they're sitting in their room and then there's like the divine or something, and then there's like a tube and it's like, and they are on the other side of the tube waiting for the divine to trickle through the channel and get to them. You know, so they're channel, like they are like, they are serving or assisting the channel, right? Virgo is the channel. Like they are constantly like, how should I hold it? How should I channel it? Like, you know, like they are the ones moving it through. It's like the magician, the card.
Well, 'cause yeah, there's a certain alchemy, right? And at best, where Virgo and Pisces meet are like where it's where the disciple meets the object of devotion, right? Or like where spirit meets the, I don't know, the temple keeper or something, right? This idea that like Virgo worships at the banks of Pisces, kind of, you know?
Yeah, it's a real loop there that we're talking about, right? Like it's sort of like we can just keep saying it in different ways. It's like I can be like, oh, Pisces waits for the channel to come, Virgo's the one delivering it, like Hermes, right? Like just like bringing those messages. On the other hand, like Virgo as a virgin, right? Virgo as the oracles of Delphi, Virgo as the medium is also there, you know, like getting high off those vapors, which is also
Totally.
Pisces, because like Pisces is, you know, the water.
Sulfurous or not, right?
So, you know, they clearly have a relationship to inspiration and to the divine. That's certain, even though I think that. And I do think that most Virgos in my life that I've known are like at least like moderately psychic. Like whether or not they live into it or really allow themselves the time and space to like access that part of themselves.
Well, and sometimes you had mentioned earlier that there's all kinds of kind of less fun flattering ways to describe the Virgo energy, and like neurotic or like anxiety ridden is one of them, right? And I think that sometimes actually certain folks, certain types, their intuition kind of functions as anxiety, where it's like they're worried about something because it is gonna go wrong. And sometimes it's that worrying that gets them to take the extra step, bring the extra thing, be prepared in some way for some grand mystery that's unfurling that might be much more inconvenient had they not brought a first aid kit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it may, the thing is, right, it's like surrender is the work and nobody wants to do it. Mm. It's like, it's still going to unravel. Like, your anxiety, your little first aid kit will not help the situation, you know? But it's good that you brought it.
But faith alone won't get us through either, right? So it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're in Virgo season. Mercury's in Virgo. It's retrograde. Mercury was still retrograde at the time of recording, but it has since stationed direct. That happened on September 15th. It stationed retrograde the first day of Virgo season, much like how Venus stationed retrograde the first day of Leo season in Leo. But there's good news, isn't there, Kala? A little bit?
Is there?
Like, there was that week where Venus was still retrograde, which was last week. That week was last week, right? From August 23rd to September 3rd, Mercury was retrograde in Virgo, and Venus was retrograde in Leo at the same time. And Venus had been retrograde in Leo already for a month. It just felt like too much, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess retrogrades always feel a little bit too much. You know, I just feel like it'd be nice if things were all moving in the same direction for a bit. That would be nice.
Well, I mean, things were all moving in the same direction. It was just backwards.
At same direction as me.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you should be.
All of us are looking forward. None of us are going back. Like, I'm.
But what do you think? What do you think folks can at least be a little less stressed about with Venus moving forward, even though Mercury's still backwards?
I don't know, to be honest with you, Rose, because I do think that people will always find something to be stressed about.
That's a good point.
That's a part of the what we were just talking about, like the neuroses or whatever, right? Like, people, like, stress is, or anxiety is sometimes the only power we have, right? It's like, we feel small, we can't actually do anything, we can cry about it, we can worry about it, we can grieve about it, you know?
Yeah.
I think that... I think that there is no planetary movement inherently, or end of one, that ends those things for us. It's like we that have to sort of decide what we want to do with those energies. So, like, change our relationship to worry, change our relationship to grief, right? So it's like, what if we didn't fear it, right? Like, what if we didn't fear the big feelings we keep having? What if we just had like an acceptance practice, and that doesn't necessarily mean giving up, right?
No.
But what if we accepted, for instance, that COVID is like not hasn't gone away, right? Like, what if we just accepted it? And then we can move on to the next step, right? Instead of worrying about it, but not doing anything about it, doing stuff about it, but we're, you know, just like all of the, like all of the sort of negotiations that people go through just to talk to each other. And if the first step is just being like, this is actually super scary and I'm scared of it. And I actually don't know how to live. I'm scared that we're going to not see eye to eye as human beings for a long time. And that is going to kill a lot of the people that I love.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're kind of also speaking to just like finding ways to be attached to the idea of anything being permanent or final or ending, and also of like we're just constantly and consistently in process, and sometimes that process is painful and devastating and feels overwhelming, and sometimes that process feels a little more manageable, right? And on the same note, I think accepting that we are already down the path of climate catastrophe and figuring out like, okay, what does harm reduction look like? What does community building look like? Also, what does it look like to just accept that regardless of what's going on contextually, we're actually all always living in like pretty different realities, and how can we find ways to points of intersection or small scale understanding in that? And like, how do we find ways to, instead of kind of gripping onto or future tripping, just like meeting each moment with as much competency and compassion as we can?
Yeah, I mean, I think points of intersection for me, what you said there, is sort of the key.
Yeah.
And I think like if I were to combine what I was trying to get at with what you just said, mm-hmm. I might say something like, it's like, okay, if you worry about it, which you can, right? Yeah. It's very worrisome. There's not much one can do but worry. Yeah. And you can, you know, research, and you can repost and research and repost and like do all of the stuff that just makes you feel more and more defeated.
Yeah.
And that would be your right. You have a right to like yeah. get upset and to grieve and to feel defeated. I have a feeling that people would get a hell of a lot more traction on the way that they want to live in the world mm. and the change that they want to see if what they did was, instead of focusing on all the things that are fucking terrifying and sad and awful, they just thought about what they could do in their week, one small thing mm. that would make them feel like they are building community with other people who love yeah. the earth. Like join the community garden, just like once, like not yeah. a thing that's like, I'm going to do a beach cleanup. You can, that's rad. Do yeah. that if that's what you want to do. That's also the same. It's part of it. It's the same story. Yeah. But I think the isolation is not helping. Mm-mm. That like, I'm just going to like spiral, and then I'm going to do these like, you know, maybe I'll do this one big thing and I'll donate here. It's not enough. Like we no. need each other, and we need to see each other as like building something that is maybe small and maybe completely useless, right? Like to yeah. the bigger picture. But I think that if somebody spent one day a week doing something that made them feel closer to the yeah. earth, that the energy from that would give them more fortitude to act in ways and to like, you know, find like community and to dream bigger.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that dreaming big is very, very hard when you feel alone.
Yeah.
And when you feel small and powerless.
I really love what you just described and what it's making me think about. Like, I think the doing the little thing that gives you a sense of satisfaction and helps you engage in process is so Virgoan. And then that allowing and enabling you to dream bigger is so Piscean. But I also think about where these two signs are situated in the zodiac. We have Pisces between Aries and Aquarius as a bridge between the individual and the collective. And then mm-hmm. we have Virgo between Leo and Libra, which is kind of a bridge between acting courageously and authentically and also finding ways to fucking get along with people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, okay, how do we work these energies so that instead of feeling anxiety and overwhelm and hopelessness, which though warranted aren't particularly useful, we start to get a sense of like, okay, what can I do right here, right now? And how can I find ways to at least get some dopamine, if not start to feel a little more connected and feel a little more capable of making some kind of a shift or a difference, even if it's largely internal or just like everybody yeah. lives in a neighborhood, right? I think, mm-hmm. you know, there's some people who live on top of a mountain somewhere, but I live on a mountain. I still have neighbors. We still talk, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's some astrological context, right? And that's some kind of musing on the medicine of the moment, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like there's more there to dig into?
I mean, I think it's like we can keep talking, blah, blah, blah. Just because we weren't like touching particular events, we weren't like, well, the moon and then the blah, blah, blah. We were, you know, kind of like
yeah,
talking about astrology a little bit more flexibly, which I guess is very Piscean yeah. to do. But It'd be, you know, like maybe we could have like a one topic we're touching. What is
Yeah.
it?
What is the one? Well, I think the topic that we're touching at this moment is actually Mercury retrograde in Virgo, which at this point we're coming out of Venus retrograde and we're still in the shadow period. And we're in kind of both the shadow period of both Mercury and Venus up until the first week of October, October 6th, 7th. So if Venus retrograde in Leo was about relationships and sense of self-worth and kind of how the ways that we reflected back in relationship or in community affect our feelings of worth or worthiness, and what we're learning about how we do and don't want to be treated and do and don't want to connect. I think at this point, now we're kind of starting to then sort through, right? It's like we've had the experiences, we have maybe reoriented our sense of like what we want to continue to invest in, what we want to pull back from, right, across the board. And now we have this opportunity with Mercury in its sign of exaltation and its home sign in Earth, right, in kind of the practical, tangible, going through the actual motion of reorganizing our time, right? It's like if we've decided we want to pull back from that person, do we need to write them a letter? Do we need to have a conversation? Do we need to shift our calendar? Like, what's happening here?
Right. And I feel like one of the things that starts to be tricky is that it's like you have to be really careful not to get stuck in weighing your options.
Mars and
You
Libra.
know, like, because the, but it's like that the Virgo thing, right? That's sort of like when the process sometimes is the product. And they're like, well, should I do this? Should I do that? Maybe I'll do it like four different ways and like I'll think it through. And then by the time that they do it, it's like, what the
It, which, you know, in some ways, I think there are these subtle ties, even though they're not, you know, they're not related by element or by mode. They don't have any real affinity, except that Virgo and Aquarius both sometimes can abstract something to the point that it's like no longer actually enjoyable to engage with or consume, right? Because they've made so many tweaks. They're like, oh, I started to make it gluten-free, and then I decided to only make it with flax, and then I didn't have sugar, and then I didn't have chocolates, and you have like this weird carob flax, whatever, that was supposed to be a chocolate chip cookie that you're like, I there's no way for me to relate to this in the way it was intended.
That's so interesting. I wonder, it's like that's very particular Aquarian experience. I don't know if I've had that. I feel like I've had a different kind of Aquarian experience that's a little bit more like conceptual. Like I've thought about this very particular way to convey this flavor, and I've been thinking about it for so long. And here's this kombucha called air. And you're just like, like, have you ever tried that kombucha that's like it's called like Simple Mind or something and just like tastes like nothing? And I'm like, somebody like it's like an Aquarian made this. Like they were just like sitting around being like, this is a concept. And they like really got into the concept and they were like, you know, they thought about the branding of it, they thought about its referential points. They're like sitting there developing this idea. And then like what comes out is that you're like, this is just nothing, like, okay.
Right, yeah. So that's
Next.
right, when when creative ideation goes wrong, and then I think the Virgo example is more about kind of the unflinching resourcefulness, like the unwillingness to just admit that you don't have what you need to do this thing.
Right.
You're like, oh, I don't have any of the main ingredients, but
And the
I'm
main ingredients are resiliency.
yeah.
I don't have any of the main ingredients. The main ingredients is just being resilient.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we got a couple more weeks. By the time this comes out, probably we'll be in our last days of Mercury retrograde, though approaching the shadow. So I think that it's really just moving slow and figuring out what actually you can or should abandon in this moment in service of actually putting whatever limited resources, energy, time, actual tangible objects you have towards their most fruitful use, right?
Yeah, I think I want to just rephrase what you're saying shorter and say it's like just get to the fruits of your labor, my dude.
Yeah, it's
You
harvest
know?
season, my dude.
Like,
Like, if the
do
peppers
you not have to
grew, great.
you don't have to like first get the peppers, organize them by color, shape, and size, and figure out which ones are good and who they go to, and like start noting like how to get them to grow better by like creating an observational
future trip to
chart.
Next year.
Yeah, like just like pick the fucking peppers, make yourself like a chutney, and have yourself a nice fucking meal because you deserve it. Like use the thing that you worked to make.
You know what this actually is bringing up for me that I think might just be useful for folks moving into, out of, through this shadow and retrograde is the Five of Cups tarot card. You know, there's like a couple spilled and then there's a couple that are still upright. And this figure is just like so beside themselves with what's spilled. But yeah, this idea of like we can spend our time kind of, not that, you know, everything needs to be grieved, right? And like definitely tend to your losses, but don't become so fixated on how you could have prevented or avoided them or ways that like you could shift your process to like maximize that you ignore the fact that like there's two cups out and it's like it's losing its fizz. Your air kombucha is becoming flat. You should be drinking it, you know?
Yeah, drink that air kombucha and enjoy that nothing. I feel like that thing that you're talking about, that thing where you're like, don't fixate on what you could have done differently. It's a lot of presumption that it's a little bit of a hindsight bias that you think that if you'd done something differently, it would have turned out better. Yeah. When in reality, I mean, let's say the divine is real for the sake of this conversation, but it's like maybe have some hubris and accept the fact that like, you were supposed to fail at some of this.
Yeah.
Like some of it was supposed to go wrong.
Yes.
You were supposed to gain some resiliency through that. You're supposed to be able to take your losses. Yeah. Loss is a part of the process, you know?
Yes.
And that if you can't handle the fact that loss is a part of the process, then you need to lose more.
Oh, shit. But it's true, right? Like...
But look at stone fruit, look at trees that grow fruit, you know, some of that fruit gets to be a delicious, enjoyed thing for the animals and the people. And some of it has to fall and rot and give back to the earth.
Right.
Some of that fruit is not meant to be eaten or enjoyed in the way that we think, but it doesn't make that fruit a waste.
No.
Necessarily.
No.
That's like, I mean, obviously this is a metaphor, like the obvious, you know, people over farm, etc. But in the divine's design of like a stone fruit tree, I'm sure that they weren't just like, every single fruit this tree grows must be placed in the hand of a human or the beak of a bird, right? Some of it is meant to fall and get lost to time and space.
It also makes me think a little bit about Ram Dass talks about, I get what I want, boring. What's the lesson there? What am I learning there? What's happening? But when I don't get what I want, like that's when things get interesting, right? And so I think that that is also another way to work along this Virgo Pisces axis, right? Is to kind of examine like, oh, what does it mean for things to not go as planned? What does it mean for me to lose half my crop? Like besides like obvious logistical issues, right? Like if you're starving and your crop fails, like that's pretty rough, right?
Climate change again. Loop it back.
but also like, there's something about consequence and the way that it's not always linear and that it's not always just about you, right? That And again, these lessons about competency and consequence and the idea that if like I do everything in my mind perfectly, then I have control over the outcome. When in fact, like, sorry, my dude, like we're sharing air and water here.
Right. Look at the bigger story. Your story is not the only story that matters. So it's like if you have a relationship to loss, right? Yeah. Where, you know, some people are having huge losses every year because things are getting worse and worse. Yeah. And I'm not saying that they need to lose more.
No.
I'm not saying that. But I do think that part of the wisdom of being like a steward of land and the earth is about recognizing that like loss is not just about us. It's a larger story that we're in. And if we take that into these different narratives of our lives, right? It's like, oh, like somebody left me. I left, like, I lost the place I was living, and all these things are so painful and life altering. But these stories, they go on without us. There's so many more elements to them. And you can grieve, you can have your pain about it. You can say, I'm grieving the loss of a future, I'm grieving the loss of like a friend. And you can also say, like, what are all the elements in place that made that friendship, made that relationship, made that housing situation unsustainable, right? Or even, what about this story? That story needed to end in order for another story to begin. Like, what was I so attached to there?
I just think that there is solace in that, in knowing that it's like not all up to you and that you don't have that control, and that's where that surrender, right? And it's like this gets into sticky situations pretty quickly, right? I'm not saying like you should be grateful or have solace around devastating like extreme circumstances that impact so many, right? Like so many people are losing so much, going through so much. And I don't think that like having a spiritual practice is gonna like save them from that suffering or make anything fair. But I think that if we're each kind of just examining our own set of circumstances and how much agency we do and don't have, that perhaps for some there is something comforting knowing that like I did my best and that's all I can do.
Okay, well, speaking of I did my best and that's all I can do.
Yes.
And at the heavy place that we just entered and moved through together, perhaps it might be fun to do our best or try to do our best in a completely silly and ridiculous environment, which is
Gala.
also something we're doing all the time, I think, or at least me. I'm always like, wow, this is stupid what I'm up to. Every day I like catch myself doing something so stupid,
Yes, I do know.
And it's because I'm high. But so I like this at a quarter of an edible. I don't know how to put this cheese slice here. This cheese slice keeps falling through my hands. Okay. So what if we played a little game that's sort of like I give you an apocalyptic situation or just like whatever we might call one in these times that we are in, and a set of like diegetic items, artifacts, if you will, and you choose the one that's going to help you get out of that situation.
Oh, I see. Okay. I'm gonna choose one of these. I'm not gonna try to combine them into something.
I mean, if you want to, sure, but I don't
The
know.
tool
I
for
guess
the
it's like,
job. We're talking about the tool for the job.
yeah, I feel like I know the Pisces rising in you wants to like weave together a narrative using like four different types of lesbian shoes, but maybe let's start with one item and see what happens.
All right, I'm ready. I'm ready.
So you are part of a soccer team, a lesbian soccer team, and you are on a bus, and you are on a bus to go to a game. And all of a sudden, you're like cutting through a major swath of rural area, and now you are being surrounded by moose. It's like a moose stampede. All you've got to face this moose stampede is vegan lube, a CSA membership, a willow basket from the farmer's market, and the astrology app. What are you going to do to get out of the moose stampede?
I'm clearly gonna gather the vegetables from my CSA membership and scatter them to try to distract the moose into eating them, right? I've got 20 summer squash. I've got 3 bunches of sorrel. I have 2 sweet potatoes. And for some reason, just 1 carrot. Don't even know why. It's just one. And a bushel of cilantro. So that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna whip up a little summer squash pico de gallo with a side of sorrel and scatter it and hope they go for it. You know, the vegan lube is probably edible, so if all else fails, I could try and grease them up, but I don't think that would help me, you know?
Right on. Okay.
Yeah. That's what I would do. You walked out onto the sandbar to have a dike picnic and kind of lost track of time. And the tide has come in surrounding you. And you're not a great swimmer. You got the Bechdel test. Good luck with that. Oh, it's a lesbian item. It's important. A camp chair.
Uh-huh.
An ergonomic dog bed. And emergency nut butter.
Wow. This is actually great. I can use all of these items.
Tell me.
I think. I mean, the Bechdel test is not an item per se, but I do think that it will keep the information, I mean, the conversation going well, because yeah, I can always kind of tell the vibe of my compatriots. I'm probably going to use the ergonomic dog bed because it's probably floatable.
Probably. There's foam in there, right?
Yeah, like I personally do swim well and I could get back to shore, but maybe you're saying that I'm not a good swimmer, so let's pretend
somebody's not. Somebody needs help.
Yeah, if somebody needs help, I'm gonna get them to hold on to this ergonomic dog bed.
There you go.
And pull it across, because that's really gonna be the answer.
Yeah.
And I'm probably gonna give them some of the emergency nut butter to keep their spirits high.
Yes.
Because I really don't. I do pretty well in situations like that. Like I will rally and I will get you back. I'm one of those people who, like, in a situation that's out of my element, like out of my league, so to speak, I act like it's my league, you know?
You're aspirational in disaster scenarios.
Yeah. Like I'll just be like, this dude is fucking with us. I'm going to act like I can beat him up. And they're like, everyone's like, no. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to chest bump him. Like that's like me in the ocean, you know?
I hear you.
All right. So you're camping in Colorado in the mountains and you're having a great time. You're thinking about even setting up here for a while. So you brought a lot of your things. You're there with a group of people who don't really know how to camp. You are the closest thing they've got to a camp expert with such something.
Wow. Yeah.
All of a sudden, fires begin to spread.
Shit.
The fires are all around your campsite. All you've got is a crush on Phoebe Bridgers, powder-free exam gloves, a whittled spoon, and fair trade oregano. What are you going to do?
Wow. Okay, so I think we're going to need all of these things. I really think we're going to need all of these things. We are going to... We're going to have Phoebe Bridgers sing along to keep our spirits up, clearly. And if you have a crush on Phoebe Bridgers, you know all the words to that album with the ghost face thing on it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do, and I know the words. Ask me how.
Yeah, I think I know. We're actually going to dig a tunnel with a whittled spoon, and we are going to sprinkle some fair trade oregano around the perimeter for no real reason. It just feels like it's a good idea. And you know, we're also going to use the exam gloves because only one person can dig with a whittled spoon. But I think with the exam gloves, we're going to get a little less under our fingernails. And then we can also start to do, once we dig out a little cave, this is kind of disgusting, but we're going to fill the exam gloves with sand and make kind of an earthen bag shelter around the cave that we dig. And then we can put some more mud on top of that.
What part of that is disgusting?
I thought you were going to piss on your cave. We're going to have to use pee probably to make some cob. But what was disgusting was the thought of the latex-free, powder-free exam gloves possibly melting. And that
smell. Yeah, that is disgusting, but not so bad.
And I think
it's true.
We could fill our nostrils maybe with the fair trade oregano as some kind of way to help us not breathe in as much smoke.
Yeah, I think it's actually, we can ask Jenny. It's pretty good for your lungs, I think.
I think so too, you know? And so, yeah, we're just going to dig a little cave and hope we can kind of just have an herbal steam down there, though it might be pee.
Your herbal steam. Pee steam.
A pea steam.
Yeah, the strong antioxidant properties of oregano can also be beneficial for lung health. I know what I know.
There you go. Okay. you're at the Boy Genius concert, and
Fantastic.
You've lost your friends. Your cell phone has died. They're your only ride back because you had to drive there with them from another state away. You have on you to help you get out of here Chacos, a carabiner, fuzzy rainbow sweatband, and a chest binder. How are you going to find them?
My friends? I don't know. I mean, okay, I do feel like, you know, is this a regular chest binder or is this like an ace bandage? Because I feel like the ace bandage...
I think it's an ace bandage.
Because the ace bandage is going to get me further.
That's
like,
what
I feel
I
like
think.
I could do a little like teepee of a tree situation. Like I could kind of get some attention going.
Yeah.
If I'm trying to find them, like, is the object to find them or to find a ride home, you know? Because if I'm at a Boy Genius concert,
right,
there's other people that are going to be happy to take me home. You know, like I'm not out on my ass in that particular venue. Like that said, you know, I do think that like, I do have a feeling, what could I do? All of these are like physical items that are kind of small and I'm trying to find somebody in a big space. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying.
I don't know if any one of these would be the thing that would help me find them. They might all give me courage in some way. Like the chacos will help keep me from getting tired.
Yeah.
You know, because they're a sensible footwear.
Yeah.
So as I roam the property, I think that whenever I've lost my friends in a concert, I've just gone to the parking lot.
Well, what I was thinking is you could, if the chest binder is in fact just an ace bandage, you actually tie the fuzzy rainbow sweatband to one end and then kind of lasso it above your head. Because presumably
so
your friends
me.
Are looking for you as well. And
yeah,
I'm not,
they're going to notice. They're going to notice that.
And then could perhaps hone in on you.
Have you ever lassoed an ace bandage around your head?
Like swung it in the air?
I just don't see it doing a lot. It's so like bong, bong.
It's bongy, but I in my experience, kind of stretchy things will swing pretty well, you know?
Yeah, maybe we can, take our shirt off, turn it around our heads. I can see.
I can see
what's happening.
Yeah, and then the other option is you just attach that carabiner to somebody else's belt loop and follow them home consensually. You know, if they say no, please don't do that.
I guess what's coming out in this particular challenge is that I might be a little fucked.
In a good or bad way, you know?
Yeah, just a little bit though.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay, let me try. You are traveling through Utah.
Yeah.
And it is high noon. Your car runs out of gas. The next gas station is like at least an hour away. And you only have like 1 gallon of spring water.
Okay.
And you are two people.
Shit.
So you're sort of like, can I make it?
Yeah.
You know? All you've got on you is dog probiotics, mineral-based sunscreen, the Sarah Lawrence alumni newsletter, and a zine collection.
Okay. All right. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to put some sunscreen on because it's noon in Utah and we don't want to be exposed. The next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to look in the Sarah Lawrence alumni newsletter and see if there's any alumni who live nearby. And whether contact information is available, right? If there's not, I'm going to fashion some kind of sunshade. I'm going to unstaple all the zines from each other and make a giant paper something. You know what? I'm going to block the windows in the car so it doesn't get too hot in there with the zines. And then I'm going to snort some dog probiotics and maybe try to hoof it. You know, it really depends.
I love how it's like, you don't even have to use all of these. But you're like, fuck it, the dog probiotics are in the, might as well fucking use them somehow.
I mean, I probably don't need that. You're right. I don't need the dog probiotics, but I think definitely the zine collection, I'm either going to try to make some kind of a sunshade out of to like walk with, or I'm going to like use it as blankets in there or block out the windows. But I think really the alumni newsletter might actually be more for, we're everywhere, you know? I didn't go to there. I just mean,
that's, you know, I want to say also that the zine collection also has contacts.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And you know where a lot of zines come out of? Places like Salt Lake City.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah.
But do you see how I set you up there? Like I gave you a scenario and the items in that scenario were kind of like useful to the scenario.
Come on. I floated you off an isthmus on an ergonomic dog bed.
That's true. That's true. The ergonomic dog bed, that definitely worked out for me, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Gala.
Mm-hmm.
You got free tickets to Dinosaur, but you don't have a dog sitter.
Oh.
All you have are spare keys to all of your ex's houses, a mini succulent garden, kombucha mother, and a gluten-free cookbook. How are you going to find a way to make it to Dinah and sit your dog?
I mean, it's like interesting. It's like, how did these items all come to me at one time? So it's true that if I were the true chaotic ex, like let's say I was like a particular type of Pisces, I could just put my dog in one of my ex's backyards.
Yeah.
Because almost all of them, upon finding her, would be very good at taking care of her. So that would already solve my problem because I would just be like, oh my God.
Surprise.
I just thought you would really like to do this. No, I'm already in transit.
I had a work emergency, babe. I'd do it for you.
I do it for you. So that would be like, if I was a different girl, I could 100% have that happen and it would be fine. Like I could just see it. Like so many of them would be like, you fucking dick. But then they'd be like, I love her. Okay. That said, if I wasn't using these keys, if they weren't part of the equation, it seems obvious to me that I would take my mini succulents, my kombucha mother, and my gluten-free cookbook and create a farmer's market spread. You know, I would divide the succulents to have little succulents to sell and a kombucha mother. And I would make a whole batch of kombucha and I would make a lot of gluten-free goods. And then every single fucking doe-eyed dyke that came over to like have a little kombucha, gluten-free good, succulent sample, I would be like, you could have all these for free if you just take care of my dog for a weekend. You know, I just be like, because it's like what you need is more people. Like I have this problem sometimes, right? Where it's like, I just can't think of who will take care of her. But if I have an exposure, like if I'm just there, maybe even with her, and then like just, and she can suss out the vibe, then I'll find a dog sitter in no time.
Yes. Works for me.
Okay.
Great job.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Okay. I have another one for you.
Give it to me.
You are part of a private gated community of lesbians and queers and faggots and whoever wants to join. And you are living a very peaceable life in the after times. One day, you hear banging at the gates. It's straights, who are also zombies, coincidentally. They want in, and they want to eat your brain. All you've got is botanical tattoo, collapsible kayak, fire cider, and a stale Luna bar. How are you going to make it out?
Well, the botanical tattoo is really just to remind me of the beauty and symbiotic nature of our plant friends and the ways that they work together, right? So that's really just that. I think that we're going to distract them by throwing the stale Luna bar at which point we will push through the gate, the kayak, with Fire Cider as a literal Fire Cider, aka a Molotov cocktail, in the middle of it. At which point, when they descend upon it, it will explode all of their straight zombie brains, and we will be free. Might have to put it on top of a furniture dolly if there's not water out there, you know? But we'll just kind of roll it out there, and they'll be like, wow, this Luna bar tastes like shit. What's this boat? But, you know, it takes a while to chew into a stale Luna bar, so I think that that also will give us the time that we need to get the boat out there, and there it goes, you know?
Oh, man, you're going to surrender your boat. Steep price.
I don't think it's going to do it to just, like, throw the Fire Cider out at them. I think we're really going to have to. And it's going to suck, because then we all might get sick that winter, you know? But it's the price you got to pay to keep the zombie straits at bay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, high price, but who else is going to pay it?
Okay, Gala, there's one more. Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
This one's going to be hard.
Sure.
You were doing an undercover piece at Burning Man this year, and you've become stuck in the quicksand.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to get off the playa using Peppermint Burt's Bees chapstick, guitar tuner, absurdly large squash homegrown, and cacao?
Absurdly large squash homegrown. Okay, well, the first thing I want to point out is that almost everyone at Burning Man loves cacao. And
yes,
that's important.
You're rich already.
Because I have, and if they're true to their word, they want to trade for the cacao. So
yes.
First of all, the cacao is a heavy resource for me.
Yes.
They know that it is a sacred plant that gives you energy and access to, like, divine connection. They are jonesing for it because they're using it instead of coffee. They are on a cacao tip.
Yeah.
And, or nib, if you will. And
the nib of the iceberg.
So I am pedaling the cacao hard, but I'm stuck, right?
Yeah.
Is that what's happening? I'm stuck in sand?
The roads are closed, so you're going to have to, like, find somebody with a pickup truck or a helicopter.
But I'm not, like,
there.
Literally stuck in sand. Like, I'm not physically.
No,
am I physically?
No, it's just flooded, and so you have to figure out how to get out of there because you're in a tent, you know?
Yeah. So 100%, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to start trading my cacao for water. Now,
yeah.
You might think, Steve, but the water comes first. I need a little bit of resource to get through these days of negotiations. So I'm trading out my cacao for water. Now I'm hydrated. I'm using my chapstick on my lips because lips burn easily in temperatures like this. And I need to have my face card on point because my greatest negotiator is my face.
Yes.
Because people like it.
Mars
and Luna. And so it's really important for me to look good.
Yes.
And I'm going to, like, you know, just use that. Now, the guitar tuner, that's not mine. I don't even know why I have it because I don't know how to tune a guitar at all. So what's important is I am going to find a guitar player and I'm going to give them this guitar tuner, right? And they are going to say to me, I have been waiting for someone to give me a tuner for 2 days.
Yeah.
And I will say to them, I know.
Yes.
And they will say, why? And then I will say, I will hold up my giant squash. And I will say, because the squash told me that you needed this guitar tuner. And this dude is absolutely going to believe me.
Yeah.
Because the squash is absurd. Like, why did I bring it? It's too big. No one is baking squash. So already it's too absurd not to believe. And then he's going to tell his friends. He's going to be like, hey, like, this girl has, like, a divine squash. Now, what I didn't mention is, you know, the person that I went to, like, they're just, like, literally in a band. And you know what band people bring? They bring whole-ass bands. So the truth is that, like, all of a sudden, this band is like, what else can you do? And I'm like, oh, I can tell you when a song is going to be a hit, you know?
Mm.
And they're like, whoa. And I'm like, yeah, just take me with you.
Just get
me into your van and, you know, don't rape me. And, you know, because I have the divine squash and you will feel You feel the effects of fucking with the divine squash woman. Anyway, word gets out, I'm divine squash woman. People are coming. They're like, yeah, this girl gave me cacao. So like really like the word is out about my not only divine gift, but divine resources.
Yeah.
And now there are multiple people vying for me to be in their car.
Great.
People with all-wheel drive.
There you go. There you go. I mean, I'm sensing that at a certain point you could get like a sedan situation, which the original sedan is not a four-door car. It is a chair that four people carry. So I really think that if you created this cult Ogala, you could get walked the 6 miles through the mud pretty comfortably.
I love how you had to like dad fact your way into telling me about the origins of the word sedan.
It was something exciting that I learned this summer, actually. Maybe you already knew. Did you?
No,
know
I
that?
Didn't. Yeah, I really no appreciate idea. Your dad fact. I love it. And, you know, I actually would prefer to be carried if there is good enough shade cover.
Yeah.
Because to be carried is probably the most fuel efficient thing.
It's the most environmentally friendly.
For me.
Yeah. And they've got so much more energy from the cacao, right?
That's true. Yeah. I have been giving them all my cacao. They're lucky.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, not everybody gets cacao or access to the divine squash.
I also feel like the whole camp around the guitar player would also be like really grateful that they're not playing out of tune guitar anymore.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. You're a giver. Everyone's-
I am, you know, and that's because the squash told me to.
I mean, who are you to squander the abundance of the absurdly large squash, right?
Like, it's a message. I don't squander the squash.
Don't squander the squash.
No, not I never have.
Never will.
I will make summer salad with the oldest squash you can find. I will just keep shredding it, and I'll be like, this is still good. So don't you worry.
Wow.
Don't you worry. Speaking of Burning Man.
Yeah.
Did you hear about their current flooding fucking mud situation?
I did. It did inspire me asking you about that disaster scenario, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Move Over Fire Festival, Mud Festival is here.
I can't wait to hear about it. I have friends that do.
Yeah,
feel that the partake. Burn.
Yeah.
They're like old friends from my teenage years, but, you know, straight people have to have something.
Yeah, it just is like a weird cosplay Mad. I'm just, what I don't understand is like, do you have to be a steampunk to go?
No.
Okay. Because that's my first question. And then my second question is it radically self-reliant when you've managed to spend $44 billion collectively and you've created the carbon footprint of a small country in a week?
I mean, you already know the answer to that. I think it's one of those things, right, where it's like anything else. It's like...
Probably started out
People ruin things.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I'm not saying it was fantastic. I never went... I don't desire to be amongst that many straight men in an area that I can't leave quickly. Like it is it's too close and too isolated at once for me to have that experience.
Yeah.
That said, like people who I know and love have been going for years. And I know people who are like my queer elders who have been going for like decades, you know, and they go in the beginning of the week. They don't like the weekend. They used to say that the weekend was when it churned, right? Like the whole week, they're like building this intentional barter style community, blah, blah, blah. And then the weekend and it gets flooded by all the sort of like the tourists of that experience, you know, but you know, it's like, look at anything else. Like look at Fire Island, like any place gets ruined. Like more people come and they kind of forget that there's a cultural aspect to it. And they just make of it a playground, which is okay. They've made of it a playground, but the playground is not all of the point. Right.
Right.
I haven't thought about Burning Man too deeply because I do understand that in general, any event that has to happen in that kind of climate really has to take a toll on it to some extent. I will say that I think in its earlier stages, that was something that people were really trying to figure out in a way that was inventive and radical and a sort of like leave it better than you found it type of way. It doesn't mean that that's how it ended up, right? People are people.
Yeah, and it's like as soon as more money gets involved too, right? I think that's something that we've been talking around but haven't like explicitly stated, that like there is this tipping point where it's nice to have access to more resource, but also like where's it coming from, by what means, and like what kind of entitlement is attached to that?
Of course, right? Because people are flying in on their private jets.
Yes. Yeah. Fucking Chris Rock is complaining about how they couldn't suck the shit out of the porta potties and he had to walk 6 miles.
I mean, Chris Rock.
I mean,
question mark.
Question mark, question mark. Yeah.
Maybe things are all just going worse and worse. Maybe we should find something that is hopeful to talk about.
Well, I can think of a couple of media examples, one that I've seen some of and one that I haven't yet.
Like what?
I've been looking for a TV show to watch. And somebody on Instagram posted about this show called The Lost Flowers of Alice Hart. It's produced by the people who did Big Little Lies and Nine Perfect Strangers. Just saying. And it's kind of giving... do you remember the Amy Adams show on HBO that was kind of fucked up but pretty good?
Sharper Objects?
Yeah, it's kind of giving that as well.
Oh.
So it's a drama on Amazon Prime. And the only person who I actually know by name, Sigourney Weaver, plays a dyke matriarch who runs a flower farm in the middle of Australia that is also kind of a ad hoc community shelter, basically for survivors of domestic violence. And so basically lost women and their children. It's pretty gendered, to be honest, is my one complaint.
Yeah, like sounds sad.
Yeah, so it's sad, there's a lot of trauma, but it's also like she's kind of badass in it. And so just for her like elder dyke style, it's amazing. Like she just wears like these cowboy hats and these high-waisted pants and like peasant shirts or whatever and looks really cool.
I mean, the role she was meant to play, I guess.
100%. And that, you know, she takes care of everybody there, and she has a granddaughter who she was estranged from, whose parents die in an accident, and she ends up coming to live at the farm. And so it's like this heavy drama where there's betrayal and secrets and whatever, but it's also these stunning beautiful shots of Central Australia, of these beautiful mountains, and then also like they're just walking through these amazing greenhouses and gardens with all kinds of really cool flowers and healing together and learning how to drive stick shift trucks, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. So it's intriguing, gosh. But it's also like, yeah, if encountering that kind of violence is hard for you, then yeah, I wouldn't go there. But if it's something that feels cathartic for you or that you can engage with in a way that does feel okay, I would recommend The Lost Flowers of Alice Hart. It's gripping.
I love that. I love that story.
Yeah.
I do feel like if I were to design a new TV show with Sigourney Weaver as a lesbian, I would need her to be on another planet in charge of like a whole spawn of aliens.
Yeah.
And a very Star Trek type of show would I create for Sigourney, you know, like the alien 8 or whatever the fuck, like whatever number is up. I would totally have her like having interplanetary relationship with like a Star Trek type of character, like half human, half something else. Like that's where I would go.
All right. Cool.
I'm just saying people are being ahistorical with Sigourney.
Fair. And yeah, there's that finally another queer movie for us, huh? It's upbeat. Haven't seen
Bottoms,
it.
You're saying?
I'm talking about Bottoms.
I haven't seen it yet, so you can't even say anything about it. No spoilers.
No, I haven't seen it yet either, because I'm just not going to movie theaters. But isn't it by the same director who did Shiva Baby?
Is it?
I think so. I'll fact check it in the notes. But let us know about it. And, you know, when it comes to streaming, I'll pay $20 for it if I have to. And
yeah, we're going to watch it and then we're going to play all kinds of games and talk about it forever. We'll dedicate a whole episode to Bottoms.
We will.
Shouldn't we
will.
Do that?
Yeah,
we'll do that next.
Yep.
Why
Bottoms
not?
For tops. we're gonna do it. We've had a request and we're gonna honor it.
Yeah, but not this time.
Not this time. Well, what do you think, Gala? Do you think that we did what we came here to do?
Maybe yes, maybe no.
Yeah, there's only one way to find out. And that's through some deep listening.
Yeah, you mean re-listening?
Yeah, that's what it is. Do you have anything you want to promote? Is there anything you're up to? Anything people need to know about? Anything you wish they didn't know about?
Whoa. What do I need to promote? I want people to use my website. Mm-hmm. So that's what I want to promote. I want to tell people that they should go to queerhealers.com.
Yeah.
And they should look at all the people there. And if they've ever messaged their friend and were like, do you know anyone who can give me a tarot reading? Do you know anybody who can read my chart? Do you know anyone who's like does Reiki? You can just like literally go and find those people.
It's true.
And then just book a session. And some they're all different prices because the people set the prices, not us. So you could find a person that's within your price point.
Yeah.
And message them about having a session. And some people who offer sessions are right here in this convo, two of us.
It's true.
So you could get a beautiful consultation about the stars with mm-hmm. Rose. You could get a very intuitive tarot reading from me. Or, you know, you don't even have to choose us. You could be like, I've heard these bitches talk enough and I don't need them to, it's like, it's one or the other. Either you love hearing us talk and now you want us to talk about you.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're just here because you like white noise and that's what we sound like to you. Like Charlie's teacher. Wow, like you're just like, and you want to like have somebody that's radically different from us do these things for you. And you know what? God bless.
That's fine.
Support them. I love people radically different from me. So, same. You know.
Cool. That sounds good.
That's what I want to promote.
Great. Yeah, I have a couple of things. My podcast is coming out on September 15th, the first episode of the first season. It's called Mutual Reception, and it's weekly. Every other week, it's just the horoscopes from that new moon to full moon or full moon to new moon. And then the weeks in between are interviews with guests. So I'm very excited about that. And
support Rose's individualization as she leans into her Aries Mars.
And my North Node in Aries, which I'm doing actually a eclipse season workshop on October 1st. I don't have a name for it yet, but it'll be up by the time this comes out.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so those are ways to find me. And otherwise, yeah, I do readings. I have gift cards. Come hang out in some way, shape, or form. Everything's sliding scale. And you already know what it sounds like to hear me talking, just not about you. I think that's it. Anything else to add, Gala?
No.
Great.
Not right now. Cool. Maybe never.
Well, I love you lots. And
I love you.
I can't wait to talk to you again.
Anyway.
Okay. Okay, bye. Big Dyke Energy is mixed and recorded by Rose Blakelock and features original music by Knight of Cups. The Ghostface Phoebe Bridgers album is called Stranger in the Alps. Emma Seligman did direct Sheba Baby and Bottoms. And my upcoming workshop is called 2-1 From Another.